Well, good morning. Good to see you, church, in here, at home, wherever you are. Bill, I appreciated that image. I love that image of the big, inviting, including, connecting table of God. So thank you for that. And folks at home, I hope you feel that. Even if you find yourself alone or just beside one other person, I hope you remember you're not alone. That when we gather to worship, wherever we are, however that takes place, we gather together and the Spirit is with us and we are with one another in spirit. And just so you know, you remain loved, you remain in our prayers, wherever you are, you're not alone. Well, this last week, our nation buried one of the best baseball players of all times, and that is Hank Aaron, Hammerin' Hank. Now, probably the most memorable image that a lot of people have of Hank Aaron, certainly the one that I have, is a video that I'm going to show you in just a moment. And it is an iconic video. It's been played a lot. It is the video of when Hank Aaron hits number 715, home run number 715. Now, for those of you who aren't baseball fans, that is an extraordinary number in and of itself. But it was that much more special because that was the home run that put him into first place all time ahead of Babe Ruth and the record that Babe Ruth held for almost 40 years. Here's the moment. Let's watch that together.
Once again, a standing ovation for Henry Aaron. So the confrontation for the second time. Aaron walked in the second inning. He means the tying run at the plate now. So we'll see what Downing does. One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. Georgia, what a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is.
Okay, now I have seen part of that video, I don't know, dozens of times in my life, but it was only part of it. I'd seen the part where he hit the home run and he runs around the bases, and amazingly, a couple of guys from the stands just run out there beside them. You wouldn't see that today. And that one always blows my mind. And then I've seen when his team meets him at home plate and they're celebrating and the fans go crazy. The part I had not seen, or at least I don't really remember seeing, is when famed announcer Vin Scully goes on to describe the context, when he gives a little perspective to what has just happened. So in case you missed it, Scully says, "What a marvelous moment." And it was for baseball, yes, and it was for Hank Aaron, yes, for the nation, for the world. He says, a black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And over the last week or a little bit more after Hank died, and I've heard a little bit more of his story, I see there is a whole new, enormous layer to that moment. And I'll come back to Hank Aaron in a few moments. First, I want to invite you to open your Bibles to Luke 7. And we are going to listen as Jess Ardrey and Chris Delapace read. And we've got a little technical glitch, so we have to do a workaround, but it's on the screen now. So I'm sitting there describing it. And Rob, you are already Johnny on the spot. I appreciate that. So let's listen, let's watch from Luke 7.
Luke 7, 1 through 10. When Jesus had finished saying all of this to the people who were listening, he entered Capernaum. There, a centurion servant, whom his master valued highly, was sick and about to die. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him. This man deserves to have you do this, because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue. So Jesus went with them.
He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to him. Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. I tell that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. And turning to the crowd following him, he says, I tell you, I have not found such great faith even in Israel. Then the men who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well.
Okay, so on the surface, this is just one of many impressive healing stories in the gospel. And this is an impressive healing story. There's an unnamed man who is sick, and he's so sick he's at the point of death, and people are sent to implore Jesus to heal the sick man. And Jesus's power is such that he does not even have to touch the man. He does not even have to see the man. In fact, he doesn't even have to be in the house with the sick man to heal him. The healing power of Jesus knows no boundaries. But when we take a step back and gain a little bit of perspective, we understand a little more of the context of the story, we realize that there are more impressive boundaries that are being crossed than just the distance between Jesus and the person that is being healed. The man who is being healed is a servant, or probably more accurately, a slave. He is someone literally at the bottom of the social ladder in the ancient world. The healing power of Jesus knows no boundaries. And the man who requests that people go on this servant, this slave's behalf, and implore Jesus to heal him, is a centurion, a Roman soldier, about middle of the way in the pecking order. We've got a runner. Those at home, you may not know it. You can't see this. This is one of the best things that's happened on a Sunday morning in a long, long time. They've slipped out the back door. We may not see them again. This is good. Pollards, I love that you're here. I absolutely love that you're here. All the kids who are here, kids, I know you don't get some of the stuff you normally do here, children's church and classes, but just know we are so glad you're here with us this morning. So, where was I? Something really important, no doubt, about the centurion. So, centurion's about middle of the road as far as the military goes. They have plenty of people that are over them, that when they command, the centurion does what their commanders tell them to do. And the centurion has plenty of people under them. When the centurion gives a command, they have plenty of people who do what they say to do. That is the way. That's how you do it in the military. And this Roman centurion is so respected and beloved by the Jews in his region that they go on his behalf. This centurion is someone who shows love and genuine care for someone under him, a servant, a slave, who was seen and treated literally, legally at that time as little more than property. But there's more. This centurion was known and loved by the Jews because he was a person that helped them build their synagogue, like their local church in the area. And so there were elders, leaders of this town, Jewish leaders of this town, who were going to plead on behalf of this centurion to Jesus. And I'm not sure if most of us would know how odd that is. But you've heard me talk about it before, that the majority of the Jews viewed the Romans as oppressors, as occupiers. And what would the soldiers be? Those would be the enforcers of the oppression. Those are the strong arms of the things that the Roman government is doing to all of these conquered people. And a few weeks ago, we were in a passage that alludes to that famous passage where Jesus says, if you're forced to go 1 mile, go a second. That's alluding to something that Roman soldiers could do to non-Roman citizens. When they encountered them, they could make them carry their military pack, a heavy pack, for a mile. Whether you wanted to or not, whether you were doing anything else or not. In fact, we've got ancient records of towns that would kind of clear out, would scatter when a regiment was walking through because people resented this and they resisted this. They didn't want to be forced to do whatever a soldier said as they walked by, to carry a heavy pack for a mile regardless of what they were doing. These soldiers were generally resented. And yet this centurion was respected and loved enough that these leaders of the people, these elders, go and plead with Jesus on his behalf. And there's more. When Jesus gets close to the house, the centurion sends people out to tell Jesus, "Don't bother coming under my roof." He humbly says, "I don't deserve your presence. I don't deserve you being here." But as a middle-ranking soldier, he understands the power of a command. When a command is given by one in power, one with authority, then that command is followed out. And so the centurion says, "Do that, and I know that will be enough." And Jesus says, "That is amazing." In fact, only twice in the Gospels do we hear that description. Jesus finding something amazing. One time is in response to the lack of faith by the Jews. This time is in response to the amazing faith by this outsider, this Roman centurion. "I tell you, I have not found such great faith, even in Israel." But if you followed along with us in this study in Luke, then you may remember this isn't the only time where Jesus has done this very thing. Taken an outsider and lifted them up as an example of faith to the insiders. So the very first sermon we hear about Jesus preaching in Luke 4, Jesus does this, and you may recall, this is one we looked at, and halfway through the sermon, everyone's giving high fives and saying amen because they think Jesus is speaking God's blessings over them, and he is. But by the end of the sermon, they want to kill Jesus because the two examples he lifts up are not insiders, but outsiders, foreigners. He talks about their great faith and God's great grace and love to all of these other people as well. In Luke 11, there is a famous story of a man going from Jerusalem to Jericho when he is beaten and left for dead on the side of the road, and two insiders, religious figures, walk on by. And who stops to help? A Samaritan, an outsider, a good one, too. And it's a little later in Luke, in chapter 17, when 10 people who are afflicted with leprosy are healed by Jesus. 9 of them go away. 1 of them comes back. Any guesses who the one is? Do you remember? It's another Samaritan, another outsider. When all the rest just walk away, over and over in Luke, we see this. You might call that a pattern, where Jesus keeps elevating people who are outsiders, foreigners, women, slaves, the poor, prisoners, disabled, people who are different. The healing power of Jesus knows no boundaries, and now we see that faith knows no boundaries. In fact, the faith that amazes Jesus, that surpasses any that he has seen among the people of God, is that of this outsider. Can you imagine how that hit the ears of the original hearers of this story? You're telling me that the greatest is not even one of us. So let me go back to Hank Aaron, Hamer and Hank Aaron for just a moment. Hitting 715 home runs was extraordinary at any time. But as Ben Scully mentioned, a black man in Atlanta, Georgia, in the early 70s, that just makes it exponentially more impressive, but also impactful. So let me tell you a little bit about Hank's story. He was born in 1934 and grew up around Mobile, Alabama. And in his autobiography, he describes how he would be playing baseball outside and his mom would start screaming for him to come in the house, get under the bed, and they would hide. And he didn't know why until a little later she would say that the KKK was marching through their street, and it was only after they were gone that he could come back out. Hank would come out and he'd go back out and play. He wasn't going to be held back. He first played baseball then in the Negro American League, and then he played in the minor leagues, and he played in a time when stands were segregated and when people would hurl all kinds of slurs and insults during the game, throw rocks at the buses after the game. And when the team would travel, the white players could go eat in restaurants and the black players had to eat in the bus. And the white players would get one hotel and the black players had to fend for themselves. At the age of 20, 1954, he made it to the big leagues. Now again, to put it in context, put it in perspective, that is 10 years before the Civil Rights Act was passed. But Aaron began to dominate baseball at a time when many parts of the nation still upheld Jim Crow laws. And even after the Civil Rights Act was passed in 64, lots of people were slow to change, because we all know you can change laws, but you can't legislate love or acceptance or respect. And so baseball fans would continue to hurl insults at him his entire career, and they would try to remind him of the place, or his place, as they saw it in the world. But Aaron continued to thrive, and the longer he played, the closer he got to Babe Ruth's record as the home run champion, which really angered a lot of fans. The fact that a black man would dare threaten to surpass the record set by Ruth enraged a lot of people. And so as he neared the end of the 1973 season, he sat at 713 home runs. That's one shy of tying Ruth's record. And as he got closer, and fear and rage began to build, in the year of 1973, Hank Aaron received almost 1 million letters from baseball fans. And tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of those letters were written by people who hated him because of who he was, were enraged because he was threatening this beloved record set by Babe Ruth. Someone who was around 40 years before, set it 40 years before, so many of them wouldn't have even seen it before. But not only were they filled with hate, they were filled with death threats, with kidnapping threats of his kids. It was so bad that the FBI had to get involved. He could not live with his family over the summer from 713, where he ended, to the next baseball season. His kids had to have police escorts to go to school. He says he missed graduation. He was always looking up in the stands to see where some sort of threat may be coming from. Even after he finished his playing career, he was always looking over his shoulder to see if there was some sort of threat coming his way. And yet, unbelievably, this humble but amazing man did not retaliate. He just became more strengthened in his resolve. And he later wrote, "I kept feeling more and more strongly that I had to break the record, not only for myself and for Jackie Robinson, but for all black people." I'll show you just two of the letters that he received. He said he didn't read most of them, but he kept all of them. And now many of them are held as historical archives. Here's one. "Dear Hank Aaron," so lovely that they started with dear, "retire or die." And then the letter goes on to list the cities and the dates that Atlanta will be traveling to different places. And the letter says it could be here, it could be here, it could be there. I might use this kind of weapon or that kind of weapon. The person even drew an image of how it would work, that he would be up in the stands. This was not that many years after MLK was shot and other prominent black figures were shot. These weren't idle threats. Here's letter number two. "Dear Mr. Slur, I hope you don't break Babe's record. How do I tell my kids that a slur did it? And he ends, I wish you the worst at everything you do, KKK forever. I don't want to try to oversimplify things, but so much of hate and racism boils down to a similar mindset. There is us and there is them. There are those who are different and there are those who are similar. However we draw the line, wherever we draw the circle, there are insiders and there are outsiders. But what do we see Jesus doing over and over in the gospel? Jesus keeps broadening the circle of inclusion. And he keeps erasing the lines of exclusion. So outsiders are welcomed as insiders. And the unwanted are treasured, and the minimized become models of love, and despised foreigners are offered equal seats at the table, and even elevated as examples that everyone else can learn from. This centurion, a pariah, is lifted up as a paragon of faith. Amazed. That's the word Luke uses. Jesus was amazed because he saw in this outsider faith he had never even seen before among the insiders. Hank Aaron later spoke to something amazing that started to happen to him the year leading up to his breaking Babe Ruth's record. So I've already told you he received tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of letters filled with hate and vile slurs and death threats and kidnapping threats. But when the press learned about that, they started to share. And when other people started to hear about that, then he began to be flooded, not just with the hate mail, but fan mail. Letters of encouragement and affirmation, and people telling him to keep going, keep pressing forward. And as he traveled around the country, something started to happen. Fans in other cities at away games started giving Aaron standing ovations. And finally, the last home game of the season in Atlanta, Georgia, as Hank Aaron sat at home run number 713 in 1973, Braves fans stood and cheered for 5 minutes straight. And Aaron later said, I couldn't believe I was Hank Aaron, and this was Atlanta, Georgia. I thought I'd never see the day. The governor of Georgia at the time, someone you may have heard of, Jimmy Carter, later said that Aaron's success in baseball played a huge role in advancing the cause of civil rights because he became the first black man for whom white fans in the South cheered. When life is beating people down, and there is a lot of beating down that's going down these days, And when so many in our world, in our nation, are hurling hateful, vile, demeaning things to others, what if Christians became known as being the cheer section of our neighbors, whoever they are? Too many Christians, as we talked about last week, are known as the condemners and the criticizers. But wouldn't it be great if we became known as the cheerers? What if the greatness we cheer in others is not just Hank Aaron greatness? It's not just what someone achieves, although we cheer when that happens, but what if it's in what they receive, that they have received nothing short of the love and affirmation of God Himself? If Jesus can celebrate the greatness in the loving actions and convicting faith of people like this centurion, then who are we to deny our neighbors anything less? Church, I pray that we will continue to allow Jesus to soften our hearts to those who are outside our circles. However we draw those lines, I pray we will allow Jesus to open our eyes to see the greatness in others, regardless of what differentiates us, to cheer on great faith, to cheer on great love and great deeds, to cheer on the greatness of being made in the image of God and eternally, unconditionally loved by Him.